Yeah, I believe I took my legal writing my first year before they had the law review. And by the time they got the intramural law review started in the third year, I had passed that stage, and I was busily taking courses to complete my bar studies. And
I see. So that will conclude the background of your school experiences. And last time we talked about your first appointment as a judge for the municipal court, and you stayed as judge of the municipal court for how many years?
Over about 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I was appointed almost 3 years, in fact. I was appointed to the municipal court in January of 1959,
mm-hmm.
went on the superior court in November of 1961. So it was almost 3 years on the municipal court.
Was there any special occasions or special cases or moments that you would remember for that period of time, 2 to 3 years of period of time?
Well, I think the things that I remember
about
the municipal court was the assignments, more than particular cases.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember that my first year I spent out at the jail on criminal misdemeanor arraignments.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, we had two judges with courtrooms right at the jail,
mm-hmm.
and as the people arrested off the streets, they were brought into our court for arraignment.
Mm-hmm.
An arraignment is the first step in the criminal process where the defendant is brought in before a judge or magistrate, is informed of the charges,
mm-hmm.
and bail is set,
mm-hmm.
and he's either released on bail or he's put in jail.
Mm-hmm.
And if he, at that time, counsel would be appointed,
mm-hmm.
if he wants counsel.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to plead guilty, then the defendants are sentenced. So it was a fast-moving court,
mm-hmm.
with many, many cases and many, many people going through.
Mm.
So the caseload on a day would be anywhere from 80 to 150 cases a day. And in those days, we operated the courts 7 days a week then.
Mm-hmm.
The regular judges worked 5 days out there, and then Saturdays and Sundays would be staffed by relief judges from other courts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I see. What was your, since it was your first experience in that court, what was your reaction to that, you know, like suddenly you have to be handling so many cases and giving?
Well, things were happening so fast that
mm-hmm.
one really didn't have a chance to sit back and worry about it. You just went in and you did what had to be done.
Uh-huh.
So in those days, the assignment was split. In fact, I was out in the jail just in the mornings.
Uh-huh.
I did all my work in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and in the afternoon I'd drive my car downtown to the courthouse,
mm-hmm.
on First and Hill,
mm-hmm.
and I would try small claims court cases
uh-huh.
in the afternoon. So in the mornings, my usual day was to handle from 80 to 100, 120 cases in the morning,
mm-hmm.
have lunch, and go across town and hear maybe 10 to 15 small claims cases in the afternoon. Well, that was my daily routine for my first year. Very busy.
Uh-huh.
Then my second year, I was out of traffic court.
Uh-huh.
So in traffic court, again, we would handle, we had what we call the big court,
mm-hmm.
the traffic ticket court,
mm-hmm.
where the judge would handle anywhere from 300 to 500 cases a day. And in the other court, I handled the drunk driving cases, and we would arraign maybe in a morning anywhere from 30 to 60 drunk driving defendants in one morning.
Mm-hmm.
In the afternoon, we would try non-jury cases.
Mm-hmm.
So after that assignment, I was sent downtown to sit on the criminal trials, and mm-hmm. And then I was supervising judge for about 5 or 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
It was time I was elevated to the Superior Court
mm-hmm.
during my third year.
I see. Gee, that's a lot of cases, a lot of work then.
Mm-hmm.
Among those cases, did you find any Asian Americans involved?
No. I would say that it was rare to see an Asian in the criminal court system.
Mm-hmm.
First, the percentage of Asians in this community is not that great. And I would say that aside from some gambling arrests, I think that I may have had as many as over my first year in the court system, there may have been a dozen gambling arrests,
mm-hmm.
and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
Very
see.
Few Asians coming through.
Mm-hmm.
In traffic courts, no difference. A few more, mm-hmm. but even then, the numbers were quite small.
Uh-huh.
And
they were just, if they were in court, they were probably just the same as the others.
Well, of course, it may well be that I didn't see many Asians in court because they just paid their traffic tickets and went on. Because the only time we saw people in court was
right.
those who wanted to see the judge.
That's right.
Because
uh-huh.
they disagreed with the traffic ticket or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I see.
So I'm not saying the Asians didn't get traffic tickets. I'm just saying they didn't show up in traffic court very
That's
often.
Right. They probably just paid. Yeah. And so after that 3 years of experiences in the municipal court, mm-hmm. and where did you move to?
From there, I went to the criminal bench in the Superior Court
mm-hmm.
for about 14 months,
mm-hmm.
during which time I think I would say I think I handled about 7 murder cases, and then the many, many robbery cases, rape
mm-hmm.
cases, fraud cases, theft cases.
Mm-hmm. Was that your own desire, or was it a promotion, or was that sort of move?
No, these are by assignments.
Oh, by assignment.
Yes, the presiding judge would assign various judges to sit in various courts.
Uh-huh.
And at that time, the theory was, and I think the theory still is, that judges should have varied experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always been a move to rotate. So I sat 14 months trying criminal cases. In some smaller counties, the judge does everything. He tries criminal cases, he tries civil cases, he tries divorce cases. But in Los Angeles County, when we have so many judges,
mm-hmm.
they can put a judge in a particular assignment and he becomes an expert in a very short period of time. I mean, in a year's time, when you're doing nothing but trying criminal cases, you become quite an expert. Quite an expert. Well, that's only the municipal court. In the Superior Court, it may take, criminal case could take a day, could take
mm-hmm.
2 weeks, it could take several weeks.
Uh-huh.
But from that first assignment, I then went out to the city of San Fernando
mm-hmm.
and tried civil cases
mm-hmm.
in a small community.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, there was no Van Nuys courthouse, so the only judicial work that was being done in the San Fernando Valley was in the city of San Fernando.
Mm-hmm.
So we had two judges out there
mm-hmm.
Handling all of the law business for the San Fernando Valley. I think now there are 20 or 25 judges out in San Fernando doing
really growing work.
But even when we were there, there was close to 1 million people.
Anyway. The reason why I ask you is that originally you start as, you know, your interest was in commerce,
business law.
Business law. And now that you have to try out different type of cases.
Yes, while I was on the municipal court, I was only on civil cases for about, other than the small claims assignment, I was in civil courts for probably just my first 30 or 60 days on the bench. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I see.
And most of my municipal court experience was in the criminal court line. And then my first 14 months in the Superior Court was doing criminal work. But after that, I went to civil, and that was my career for the rest of my stay on the court system.
I see. Was that very challenging, getting these different assignments that you would, in different areas?
Oh, yes. It's the one thing interesting about being a judge is every day is different. I mean, there's no such thing as routine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there may be routine type cases, but you're dealing with people and with relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes a husband and wife relationship, sometimes a parent and child relationship, sometimes a business partner relationship, sometimes a relationship of parent and teacher. Sometimes we had cases where the conflict is between patient and doctor. So these are all the human areas of conflict ultimately wind up in the courts. And then we also have the cases of government versus citizen too, not only in the criminal court setup. We have tax cases where the taxpayer is objecting to paying the government as much taxes as the government claims. Or a citizen versus government, where the businessman is told that he cannot build this type of building, and he wants to challenge the correctness of that ruling. Or, in case of an adoption, maybe the adoption agencies would not approve of a certain adoption, then it's up to the judge to resolve this conflict between the adoption agency and the individual.
I think being a judge is very, very difficult because you're involved in so many human relations, yet I'm sure there's emotion, a lot of emotional moments, a lot of this type of situation, and being a judge, being a judge, you have to know how to control these kind of emotional and not to express your own...
Well, I think that's one of the important things a judge must do is to maintain certain decorum in the courtroom, because we realize that many people do not have the experience of appearing in court, and we know that everyone has a certain fear of going to court. And already they're emotionally charged because of their particular case. And very frequently there is a good deal of sometimes hatred between the parties who appear. If not certainly reasons for some unpleasant that's between the two before they get to court. So, and that's another thing, the judge has to be able to determine what the facts actually are, because everyone sees facts a little differently. And sometimes, even unconsciously, witnesses will slant testimony to suit, to place himself in a better light. And so that's one thing the judge has, and a jury too. The jury has to decide how much of how much of the testimony is true.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes witnesses will actually lie.
Mm-hmm.
Other times they will stretch the truth, sometimes unconsciously, sometimes consciously. And I think that's particularly true in some of our automobile accident cases. I mean, no one likes to admit that he was at fault.
That's right.
In the
yeah.
accident, especially when someone is injured very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
They like to feel that, well, they were careful and what they did was within the definition of proper conduct.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What is the relationship between the judge and the juror?
Well, actually, there is a cooperative relationship between the judge and the jurors.
Mm-hmm.
First, it is up to the judge to rule upon what we call legal issues.
Mm-hmm.
It is the judge who decides what testimony shall be presented to the jury,
mm-hmm.
which testimony should not be presented to the jury.
Mm-hmm.
But it is the jury who, once having received this testimony, mm-hmm. it's up to them to make the findings of fact and to decide who's telling the truth
mm-hmm.
and who's not telling the truth. It's up to them to decide whether or not a doctor was negligent, whether he was not negligent, whether a driver was negligent, whether he was not negligent. But of course the jury does not know the law, so it's up to the judge to tell the jury at the end of the case,
mm-hmm.
the law that applies to this case is such and such. If it's a contract case, the judge will tell the jurors, in order for there to be a contract, you must believe that there was A, B, C, and D.
Mm-hmm.
If you find that one of these elements are missing, there's no contract, then this is what you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if it's an automobile accident case, they have to say that the duty of a driver is to yield the right of way to oncoming cars. If he does not do that, he's negligent. And if you find the defendant negligent, then you must assess damages.
Mm-hmm.
And you tell the judge tells the jurors what should be included
mm-hmm.
as damages. Loss of earnings, recovery of medical costs,
mm-hmm.
pain and suffering,
mm-hmm.
loss of future earnings. These are all the ingredients that go into a judgment.
Mm-hmm.
The jury, once having received the instructions on the law from the judge, will apply that law to the facts and come up with a verdict.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever have a difficult time with your jurors?
Oh yes, I mean sometimes jurors will return verdicts that are not proper,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes we can correct it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when we read the verdict, we see that there's what we call inconsistent verdicts.
Mm-hmm.
For example, now we sometimes have special verdicts. We have questions we present to the jurors.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you find there was a contract? Yeah, if so, who breached the contract? And so forth and so on. And sometimes the questions are inconsistent.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they answered yes to number one, they couldn't possibly answer no to answer two because the two were related. So sometimes we can correct this by saying, well, this is inconsistent. You must do this or you must not add this. Go back and bring out another verdict. Along these lines, with these corrections.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes we can correct the juror's verdict.
Uh-huh.
There are other times where we cannot. I mean, for example, they come in with a verdict in a serious injury case, and they come in with $1 million verdict. The judge then has the duty and the responsibility, if he feels $1 million verdict is too high,
mm-hmm.
he can reduce it.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, the judge also has the right to add to the amount. For example, if the jury came in with a $500,000 verdict and the judge thinks it should have been $800,000,
mm-hmm.
the judge has the power to raise it.
Oh, I see.
Or to lower it.
Mm-hmm.
And generally speaking, he must indicate his reasons for it.
Mm-hmm.
And the dissatisfied lawyer can then take it up on appeal to see mm-hmm. whether the judge overstepped his area of discretion.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how the judge and jury cooperate.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about, I mean, personally, how you react to the cases that you have mean, you deal with, and the NADA was appealed. I think most of the a lot of the cases were appealed. Was that correct?
Or well, no. Actually, it's a very small percentage of cases that are actually appealed and brought through the whole appeal process.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any specific figures on how many cases are appealed, but I would hazard a guess that it's less than 10%.
Uh-huh. Were you notified, or
yes.
You would be aware of what cases were going?
Oh yes, we usually were notified of which case is being appealed,
mm-hmm.
and they usually send the trial judge copies of the briefs
uh-huh.
on both sides, and
uh-huh.
then of course the trial judge then gets the ultimate decision from the upper courts too.
Mm-hmm. I see.
But I would say that I would say in my 23 years on the bench,
mm-hmm.
I may have had 100 appeals,
mm-hmm.
150. I would say no more than 10, maybe about 10 a year, 8 to 10 a year
oh,
on
I
the
see.
Average.
What was your responsibility after that?
Oh.
There's no...
Usually,
I'm worried.
If it goes up and there's a firm, then there's nothing more to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we reverse with instructions for lower court to correct a certain thing.
Uh-huh.
So it comes back. And sometimes it comes back, but if you're no longer in that department, someone else might have to correct it for you.
Oh, I see. So, well, we were talking about so much about the court system, I guess,
yeah.
just
yeah,
due to my
yeah.
ignorance. And you were talking some of these experiences that while you were at the Superior Court, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk more about how you get to appoint? Is it appointment also to the Superior Court? And
yes. Most judges receive their position.
Mm-hmm.
By gubernatorial appointments.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that 90% of the judges receive their positions by gubernatorial. The other alternative is to run for election,
mm-hmm.
which is very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Now and then, there are what we call open positions,
mm-hmm.
where the judge does not resign, but serves out the rest of his term.
Mm-hmm.
Judges have 6-year terms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So some judges just serve out their 6-year term and retire.
Mm-hmm.
In which event, his seat then is open for election without an incumbent.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone, any lawyer with 5 years experience, if he wants to go on the municipal court for 10 years, on the Superior Court,
mm-hmm.
can file for that job, and then one's election gets a seat.
Mm-hmm. I see.
But most of the time, a judge will resign in the middle of his term
mm-hmm.
for various reasons, and then the governor will appoint someone to fill out his term.
I see.
Or to start a new term.
I see. So you were at the Superior Court for over 15 years?
I was at Superior Court for 20 years.
Years.
Yes, I was on the Municipal Court for about 3 and the Superior Court for over 20.
Oh, I see. And then you retired from Superior Court.
That's right.
All right. So you were appointed actually, well, once your term is, expires, say, 6 years, and do they reappoint you? Or?
No. Then you run for re-election.
Oh, you start running for
re-election. Oh, yes.
Right.
Yes. For example, on the Superior Court, whenever a judge is appointed by the governor,
mm-hmm.
he comes at the next general election, he goes on the ballot
for
a full 6-year term.
I see.
And anyone who wants to can run against him.
Mm-hmm. So
then after 6 years, he runs again,
uh-huh.
and anyone can run against him.
So you have been running for 3 times or four times?
I ran, let's see, I was appointed in 59.
Uh-huh.
I was on the ballot in 1960.
Uh-huh. That was in municipal court.
Municipal court.
Right, uh-huh.
For 6-year terms. So.
Okay.
But then in 61, I was appointed to Superior Court.
Uh-huh. By governor.
By Governor Brown.
Brown, okay.
So so in 1960,
mm-hmm.
1962,
uh-huh.
I had to run for a full 6-year term.
I see.
So I ran from, that was 62 to 68.
Mm-hmm.
In 1968, I had to run again for a 6-year term.
Mm-hmm.
It took me to 74,
mm-hmm.
and 74
80.
To 80.
Uh-huh.
And then I got a 6-year term in 80, and I retired in 82.
I see. Oh. So what did you have to do when you ran the election?
Well, the first thing you had to do was to, in February, you file a notice of intention to run.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got a nominating petition and
mm-hmm.
had 20 or 30 signatures on it. And then you had to pay a filing fee.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was it. Opposition, and you had to go out and get your friends to raise funds for you and carry a campaign.
Oh, I see. So, in order to get that, like 20, how many signatures do you need to?
Oh, for the nominee petition, it's only you submit 30 signatures, 20 of whom have to be registered voters. So it's very simple.
Uh-huh, I see.
Where
did you usually get the signature? I know that you have many, many friends. And
well, usually we would just, I just asked one of my friends to get me 20 signatures. But in the earlier days, we had to pay a fee, a filing fee of, it was anywhere from $500 to $600.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, later on, the Supreme Court, or just the legislature, because the Supreme Court law indicated that you couldn't keep a person off the ballot simply because he couldn't afford to pay the money.
Mm-hmm.
So they had an alternative method that you could get signatures instead of paying the cash.
Oh.
So in the case of the Superior Court, I think the filing fee was about $600.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to waive the filing fee, you could get 2,400 signatures.
I see.
So Dolores helped me get 2,400 signatures.
So Dolores, your wife is very...
Well, she got it organized. She got each of her friends to say, well, I'll get 50 signatures for them. I'll get 20.
Uh-huh.
So that's how come in 1980, when I came up for re-election, went down and got a whole stack of petitions, and Dolores got some of her friends to each volunteer. Some of them got 20 signatures, some got 50,
uh-huh, uh-huh.
Some got 100 signatures for me.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's really nice.
So we wound up with, actually, instead of, I think we had something like 4,000 signatures.
What do you need?
We needed about 2,600 or something, 2,900.
Mm-hmm. I see. So can you describe about your experience? I mean, you talked some of that already. What is your most memorable a time or a moment or just at the time of during that 20, it's a long time, over 20 years of in the Superior Court.
Well,
you can start with the 5 years period.
Well, I would say that of all the assignments I've had,
mm-hmm.
I guess the one that I got the most satisfaction out of was the 5 years I spent in the Appellate Department of the Superior Court.
That was from?
That was from 1968 through 72.
Uh-huh.
Those are the 5 years. Oh, here comes